As Canadians, we know something about this so-called friendly fire. You probably remember that in April of 2002, an American F-16 fighter dropped a bomb near Kandahar and killed four Canadians and injured a number of others. And then in 2006, two U.S. warplanes fired on NATO forces in southern Afghanistan, killed one Canadian soldier and injured 30 others. It's a sad thing, it's a terrible thing when a soldier dies in battle. It's even more painful, even more difficult when that soldier is killed not by an enemy fighter, but by somebody who's supposed to be on the same team, somebody who's supposed to be fighting on the same side. It's even more difficult to accept then. And my guess is that all of us here today know something about friendly fire. My guess is that most of us here have been wounded or hurt or betrayed or rejected by brothers and sisters in Christ, by the church, by spouses, by family, by loved ones, by co-workers, with business partners. I'm sure that we have all experienced that in some degree, that someone that we never would have expected to hurt us, someone that we would never have expected to create pain in our body, in our lives, intentionally or unintentionally, has done that. And the pain that we experience. So this morning, as we begin a series called Healing Wounded Hearts, I want to open a window into my heart for you. I want to open myself to one of the most difficult, painful times that I have ever experienced in my life, in my family's life, and in my life. And I'm going to be very open and transparent with you. And some of you may feel I'm going to be too much so. And I hope that I'm not going to offend. Because I want us to be able to look at those times in our life when we've experienced that friendly fire. When people that we loved, again, could be intentionally or unintentionally, hurt us. People that we have worshiped with for years who choose to go a different direction and leave our church. People that were close friends, perhaps that we fellowship with, we camped with, those types of things. And so for me, it began in the late 90s, the church that I served in Regina had been there for 8 years. And the last 2 years that I was there, God was doing remarkable things among us. In those 2 years, we brought more people to Christ than in the previous 8 years added together. For the first time in the history of the church had been planted about 35 years before. For the first time, believe it or not, the first time in the history of the church, we were debt-free. We had a building program, and we said, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could bring $50,000 into our building program this year? We brought in $120,000. We had a prayer ministry that was so vibrant and so exciting that I was invited to write 2 articles for Christian magazines to describe what God was doing in prayer in our church. Now, when I tell you all of that, you would think that the church must have been overjoyed about what was happening. They must have been pumped to see God work that way. And the reality is, most of them were. But there were also a few families, about 5 families in the church, who decided it was time for me to go, that I was not the leader to lead that church any longer. My time was passed. And they made it their mission, and I'm not exaggerating when I use that word, they made it their mission to get rid of me. In fact, the day I resigned, one of the families left the church telling people that they got what they wanted so they could move on now. And it was 2 years of incredibly different pain. Now, I'm not going to get into all the gory details, but just to say, I finally resigned after 2 years of this ongoing conflict. The elders board asked me not to resign. The district superintendent asked me not to resign. But I was just at the point emotionally and mentally that I couldn't handle it anymore. And as a result of all that happened in those 2 years, our children struggled in their walk with God. And my health suffered, and my wife's health suffered. To this day, 18, 19 years later, my son, our son, has no use for God. No use for Christians, no use for the church. But it wasn't just us. It wasn't the Pope family, just the Pope family that suffered. On my last day, the last Sunday that I preached there, May 6th, 2001, there were about 250 people in church. The attendance eventually drifted down to about 80 or 90. When I resigned, we were on our way to being able to build probably within a few years. And 19 years later, they still have not built that church. And this is the pain of friendly fire that I think most of us have experienced. Not necessarily that you have to resign from a church, but we've experienced it. But here's the good news. The good news is this. Although it was the most painful time in my entire life, God didn't waste it. Do I look back and say, boy, I'd like to go through that again because I learned so much? No. But could I say, yes, I learned a lot from that? And I would say, yes. I learned some valuable lessons. But how do you deal with friendly fire in a church? How do you deal with it when people who served on the elders board with you, that you literally camped with and took trips together with, that you would have said were probably your lifelong friends, and then they decide to turn against you and get rid of you? I learned how to deal with that. And I would go back and do many things differently from that time. But in the passage that Pastor Matt read earlier, we see that it isn't just me that's gone through this. It isn't just Arundale Alliance Church that's gone through it. We see that King David went through it. That King David went through the same thing. In verses 12 to 15, he talks about all this pain he's going through, and he says, it wasn't my adversary, it wasn't my enemy that did this to me, it was my friend. We hung out together. We suffered together. We did things together. We were buddies. And it was that person that put me into the pain that I'm in now. And so we see in Psalm 55, how do we recover from friendly fire? When we've experienced this, how do we recover from it, from these deep wounds that are inflicted upon us by people that we loved? Well, the first thing we see is that it's so important for us to recognize and to acknowledge the pain. Listen to what David says in verse 2. My thoughts trouble me and I am distraught. In verses 4 and 5, just listen to the pain of these words. My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death assail me. Fear and trembling have beset me. Horror has overwhelmed me. Horror has overwhelmed me. And if you know anything about King David, you know that he wasn't a man necessarily given to this kind of emotion. I mean, he was a great warrior. He was the king. He was a powerful leader, the greatest king in the history of Israel. He was what we might call today the best of the best. He was not a guy who was kind of prone to, to crying out these kinds of things, to being in fear or to being emotionally confused. But his friend, the rejection of his friend and the betrayal of his friend had demoralized him. He was fearful. He was shaking. He doesn't know what to do. And there's this very powerful image in this passage of pain that he is going through as a result of the betrayal of his friend. If you've ever experienced friendly fire, you know something of what he was going through. When you've been betrayed by somebody that you deeply loved and cared about, you kind of feel like your feet have been knocked out from under you, and the ground where you're standing is kind of crumbling around you. And you feel like you're going down into a pit. And sometimes we thought that the people closest to us, the people that we thought loved us and cared for us, could be trusted. I love them, they love me, and we can trust them. And then we discover that actually they've betrayed us. And we wonder, if I can't trust them, who can I trust? If I can't trust this person that I shared confidences with, that I was there for them when they were going through pain, and instead what they've done is betray us, who can I trust? How do I know that if I don't risk, if I were to take a risk again with another friend, how do I know that they wouldn't do the same thing? How do I know that they wouldn't betray me? Everything seems like it's kind of falling apart. Like I have no sure footing to stand on. And sometimes what happens is that we begin to project this doubt, not just toward the person or the people that betrayed us, but we begin to project the doubt onto God. I was sure I could trust them, and I couldn't. I wonder, can I really trust God? Will God do the same thing? Will God betray me? Will God hurt me? When I need God, will he be there? And you see that in some of David's words. If you read the psalm, you see the pain that's there. It's like he's pleading with God to listen to him in verse 1. And it's like he's saying, God, when I knock at the door, when I knock at your door, please be there. Don't ignore me. I need you right now. And in my case, I became angry with God. And I was fear-driven. I had become absolutely driven by fear. And that fear caused me to doubt that God would be there. And I remember being so angry with God. God, look what's happening in our church. All these wonderful things are happening. How can you allow me to go through this? And I chaired the ministerial in Regina. And look, God, look, I'm helping. I want to build unity in our city. Why are you allowing me to go through this? Why? When my prayer life is the best that it's probably been in my whole Christian walk, why are you allowing this to happen in my life? So what I felt toward these people, I projected onto God. But friends, what we've got to notice here is in no place does David deny his pain. And if we're going to recover from the friendly fire that we have experienced, if we're going to move on from the trauma of friendly fire, it isn't a time for platitudes. It isn't a time for cliches. Well, true Christians don't experience fear. True Christians don't experience doubt. True Christians don't feel pain. In the church we attend In Russia, our youngest granddaughter was in hospital for about a week, and she was supposed to be released on the Sunday. So after church, I came out, and my wife was working at the welcome table after, so I thought, well, I'm going to check and see if they texted me if she's coming home. So I'm checking my email, or my text, I mean, sorry, and this guy standing beside me, who I didn't know, says, what are you checking your texts already after church? I said, well, yeah, my granddaughter's been in hospital. And, oh, what was wrong? And I told him. I said, yeah, we were pretty worried. Here was his response. You mean concerned. Christians don't get worried. And I said, no, I'm pretty sure I was worried. I'm pretty sure I was worried. This isn't the time for those kinds of platitudes. This is the time to say, I am hurting like crazy. I admit that. I acknowledge it. I sometimes feel like I can't stand up. I feel like nobody loves me or cares for me anymore. But we admit it. And then we say, I'm going to deal with those hurts in a biblical and a healthy way. They're real. I have to deal with them. I can't ignore them. Can't pretend they're not there. But I'm going to deal with them in a biblical and a healthy way. So we begin by recognizing and acknowledging the pain that we're in. The second thing that David talks about in verses 6 to 8 is that we resist the desire to escape. We resist the desire to escape, the desire to escape. And that's often our first impulse when we start going through these things and experiencing these things, I'm getting out of here. I'm out of here. And he says in verses 6 to 8, oh, that I had the wings of a dove. I would fly away and be at rest. I would flee far away and stay in the desert. I would hurry to my place of shelter far from tempest and storm. And there are so many ways for us to fly away. One is to just take off physically, to just leave the situation. I can't deal with this. I don't want to deal with this. I'm leaving. Some pastors I know have resorted to alcohol, to medication. By the way, just to throw this in, I did my thesis on conflict in the church. You might figure out why I did that. And I did a survey of all the pastors in our district, all the Alliance pastors. 96.8% of the pastors, the Alliance pastors in our district, had experienced conflict to a significant degree. 96.8%. And so some people choose to medicate that pain. Other people just shut down emotionally. I'm going to keep people out. I don't trust anybody anymore. I'll keep everybody at an arm's length. Some people bury themselves in their work. And although I can't believe it today, let me tell you what I did. I prayed and I asked God to give me cancer or a heart attack. That way I would be gone, I'd be out of the situation, but my wife would still have my life insurance. That's how bad the pain was for me. And I look back at that and I say, Dan, what were you thinking? I wasn't. I was feeling. And I was feeling in a lot of pain. And I wanted to be out of it. We have all kinds of ways of shutting down and keeping people at a distance. One of the things that happened in our family, my immediate family, was that one of the people just has refused to risk deep and meaningful relationships since then because they're so afraid that it could happen again. The one who was probably the most relational in our family in terms of forming deep relationships, now forms the least. But the problem is there's a couple of issues with this type of approach to dealing with things or not dealing with it. The first is quite simply, it's no way to live. It's no way to live. There's no reality in that kind of life. We're just pretending. We're pretending to do relationships. We're pretending to be happy. We're pretending to have a life. But it's all a big show because inside we're hiding. We might look like we're real outgoing, but we're actually holding people at a distance, and it's no way to live our lives. We're just escaping the world. And the second problem with just shutting down is that really it's an absence of faith. Rather than trusting God, we're just hiding and escaping. And the reality is that we emotionally shut down when we run and when we hide. We also shut down or we hide from God. I have a belief that says this: I cannot be truly intimate with God if I refuse to be close with his people. Love God, love your neighbor. And if I refuse to love my neighbor, I don't believe I can fully love God either. And so we make this decision that I'll just keep people at a distance, then we're also pushing God away also. And here's the other concern about that. When you push God away, you're pushing away the only person who can heal you. The only person who could bring full healing to your life is the person that you are pushing away, that you don't want to be near you. As a result, we're sentencing ourselves to this kind of a life, to this type of miserable existence for the rest of our lives. And it's a terrible way to live. So it's not a good strategy. So we don't want to escape. We resist the desire to escape. And we admit the pain that we're in. And then the other thing that David said that was so key for me to realize is to realize that we still have a ministry. We still have a ministry. God's plan for our life is not going to be blocked by someone or some people for what they have done to us, whether it's intentionally or unintentionally. And David says in verses 16 to 18, "But I called to God, and the Lord saves me. Evening, morning, and noon, I cry out in distress, and he hears my voice. He ransoms me unharmed from the battle waged against me, even though many oppose me." We've already looked at the fact that at the beginning of the psalm, David is all over the place emotionally. He's talking about the horrors. He's talking about the pain. He's talking about the fear. All of those things. And we're not sure as we read that, how in the world is he going to respond? What's he going to do? But as the psalm progresses, what we see is that as he begins to works through his emotions, he begins to regain perspective. And now he says, "I know God will listen to me." Before it was, "Oh God, when I knock on the door, please don't ignore me." And now it's saying that I know God, that God saves me. It's good that God will rescue him and he will continue to use him. That he'll get things back on track. And he's beginning to see that his days of ministry, his days of usefulness to the Lord are not over. And beloved, we must understand this truth, that God can build fiery faith through friendly fire, but only if we let him. You see, the only way that the devil can block the plans that God has for you is if we let him. Is if we decide, "I'm not going to turn to God, God won't use me anymore anyway," then the devil's won. God, we cannot allow the opinions and the actions of others to determine whether or not God can still use us. I had been in ministry for just about 20 years when I left that church. And the 9 years in the previous church had been, I've told you stories about that, winning people to Christ like crazy, seeing unbelievable healings take place. The first 8 years in this church had been good, and 2 years of pain. But I decided I was leaving ministry. I never wanted to pastor again. I'd had it. I was done. For the first few months, I only applied for secular jobs. There were churches that were phoning me and saying, hey, can we talk? Are you interested in a move? And I said, no, I'm not interested in a move, and I'm not interested in ministry. I don't want to ever pastor again. Because I had decided that God could not use me. That God would not use me. Because I never knew what I did. I met with those. There was five families. One of them always refused to meet with me. The other four I met with between 2 and 7 times. Tell me what I did. That you know, you were once one of my biggest supporters. And now you can't wait to get, what did I do? I never got answers. So I was afraid to pastor again in case I blew it again. So I said, I'll just pump gas or something. And then in my devotions one day, I remembered. I remembered this guy. His name was Joseph. And his own family rejected him and sold him into slavery. Now you think your ministry is done, you're finished, but instead he rises to the second most important in Egypt, person in Egypt. And God uses him to be able to alleviate the famine in Israel and ultimately for his own family. And I thought, hey, he didn't lose his ministry. And then I thought of another guy. His name was Samson. And he was betrayed by the love of his life, Delilah. And you would think he's done. But instead, in the end, he persevered and he still won the victory. And they were unable to rob him of his ministry and what God had for him. And so we need to remember that we still have a ministry. God still wants to use you. God still wants to use me. We have to resist the desire to escape. We have to acknowledge the pain and remember the pain that we're in. And then finally, refuse to give up on God or people. Refuse to give up on God or people. Cast your cares on the Lord in verse 22, and he will sustain you. He will never let the righteous fall. Even in this dark hour, when there was no clear evidence of safety, David still says, I'm going to trust God. I don't see the answers yet, but I'm going to trust God. And I'm going to trust people. I think one of the saddest things, as I'm involved as a member of the conflict committee for the district, I'm involved in going into short-term solutions for churches, not transitional pastoring, but just going in as a committee, is that friendly fire doesn't always end the way that we would like it to. I loved that church. I thought that I would be there till I retired. It wasn't easy for me to realize that wasn't going to happen. That I was going to leave and had to leave for my own health. And Jesus himself knew what it was to be betrayed by close friends. He didn't try and stop Judas. He didn't try and take vengeance on him. He just entrusted him to God. But it didn't mean that Jesus survived his betrayal, because we know that he didn't. And David knew what it was to suffer that pain, the pain of the betrayal of close friends. And it's always going to hurt, friends. I resigned in 2001. And there are still nights that I wake up in the middle of the night and ask, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? 18 years later. And I think there's always going to be that hurt there. And David says, though, God is saving me now. He saved me in the past, and I will trust that he's going to continue to do it. My fate and my enemy's fate are not in my hands. They are in God's. I will trust God to do what's best for me and for my enemy, no matter how much I've been hurt. I will invite any who will to walk with me. So Jesus didn't survive his betrayal. But remember this, beloved. He rose from the dead. David continued with his reign. His son Solomon later took over the rule and became the wisest man ever. And the line of David ended up being the line from which Christ our Savior was born. David's trust wasn't misplaced, and neither is ours when we trust in God. I know that there are some of you here today that identify with this. Some of you here who have experienced that pain, the brokenness, the wounded heart of betrayal by friendly fire. You felt the pain. You know what David's talking about. But you know what? You've stopped halfway through the psalm. You stayed caught up in those emotions. You're still caught up in the pain, and the days have turned into weeks, and the weeks have turned into months, and the months have turned into years, and you're still there. And beloved, it's no way to live. And if you're still in that spot, I urge you, it's time to finish the psalm. It's time to move on as David did. God is offering healing. He stands ready to listen to you. He stands ready to feel your pain, to heal your pain. And we just cast that on him. And then we move on. You see, sometimes we come to the cross and we dump something at the foot of the cross. But we keep coming back and grabbing it. What God is calling us to do is to bring it to the foot of the cross and to leave it there. Roll it over from your shoulders onto his shoulders. Understand that we've been deeply wounded. That's a truth. But someone that we cared about betrayed us, and that every relationship now contains that risk. It really does. Any relationship that you form contains that risk. How do we know that somebody else won't do it? How do we know that God won't do it? It may not be a good solution for you, but it's a step of faith. When I ended up, after a year being out of ministry, accepting the call to become president of Clearwater College, I was scared. No, I wasn't. I was absolutely petrified that I was going to blow this one too. It's a step of faith. I believed that God had called me there and that God wasn't going to call me there if it was going to be like that again. God will set us free. We don't have to live with that pain. We can again be open and real in our relationships with other people. Can we trust God to get us through it? Can we trust that he will protect us? That he will bring healing? That he will give you back your life? And so when you're betrayed by a friend, when you experience friendly fire, the only place that I know of to go is to turn to God. Father, thank you so much.